Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on this week's show. The fixtures are out. Who do we play and when do we play them? Spoiler alert, we play everyone twice. Do we miss Derby Day? Phil Buckingham gives us a red and white perspective. And burn, baby, burn. Newcastle's Big Dan talks to The Athletic's little Chris. Hello, my name's Taylor Payne. Welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. The boys are back in town. The three of us have been reunited after last week's live episode. How the devil are you, George Corkin? It's been a while, dear boy.
What? It's June. This is June. Why are you talking to me? Hello? What?
Apparently we are contractually obliged to continue talking to each other during the summer now. I didn't agree to that.
It's June. I've got nothing to say to you, Taylor. I'll speak to you in a few weeks. I'll speak to you in August.
Okay.
See you later.
And that's all from Pod on the Tyne for this week. Thanks a lot. What do we do now then, George?
Well, I don't know. I presume just talk shit for 45 minutes and then go.
Make Sven Botman jokes for the next 6 weeks.
No, 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 no. That's not allowed. No more of those. One was enough. Ten was enough.
Absolutely. Chris, how are you doing? You all right?
I am all right, although I've just had a flashback to... I forgot to mention this on the last podcast, but before the end of the season, a few journalists were invited along to... The Newcastle United Foundation held a play on the pitch, sort of five-a-side event at St. James's.
Oh, yeah.
And a photo was taken of me and the rest of my team. And I sent this photo to George, to which he replied with, "Just out of interest, nothing to do with the picture or anything. What do you think about the increasing use of slim-fit football shirts?" So George Culkin fat-shamed me in reply to my message, and I'm still quite scarred by this. He denies that this was the case, but I just had a flashback there with him being so angry. I just thought, you know...
I wasn't angry.
To be fair, Chris, if you send a picture to George Culkin, that's where you've gone wrong. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah.
You should know better than that by now.
Well, I mean, I did say, in my defence, I did say it was nothing to do with that picture. I was just vaguely thinking about the tightness of football shirts and that perhaps... certain people might want to consider getting a slightly larger shirt or something. I don't know, but it was nothing to do with you, Chris. You're a fine figure of a man.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah.
Yeah. George, did you happen to catch the live show last week? Did you enjoy it or did you just not listen out of pure sort of resentment?
God, no.
You didn't, fair play.
God, no. Absolutely
probably
not.
For the best.
No.
You're talking absolute hammering.
Yeah, that's fine. No, it's June. I mean, I don't want to think about football, so which is a shame because that's my job.
Absolutely. So. Well, I think we might as well jump straight in. And before we crack on with the main bulk of the show, Chris, we need to talk about transfers. What's happening? Where are they? Who are the players that we are potentially going to buy, not buy, have live in Jesmond Dean House for the rest of the summer? Who are they?
Well, I was off last week, and during that time George was quite angry beforehand because he thought that he was going to have to do loads of transfer related things, to which he's delighted that nothing has really happened in the last week. He's not delighted in the sense he would like Newcastle United to strengthen, but in the sense that he didn't have to cover it. So basically we aren't that much further forward than we were on last week's live podcast. So Newcastle are still in talks to bring Hugo Ekitike from Rennes. Mm-hmm. Newcastle are still in talks to try and bring Sven Botman in from Lille. They remain keen on trying to bring in a goalkeeper, although there isn't as much of a priority as other positions. And subsequently, It was reported last week that Newcastle are interested in Nick Pope of Burnley, which I was surprised by when I first heard. But actually, yes, it is. That is true. He is someone who is on the list. And I think that's to do with availability much as anything else, because I'm sure eyebrows will be raised in terms of maybe how good Nick Pope is on the ball, because that is one of the things Newcastle were ideally looking for in a goalkeeper to challenge Dubravka. But Nick Pope is a very, very good shot stopper. He's Premier League experienced and may be available for a reasonable price. So he's someone they are looking at. But at this stage, Matt Target is still the only addition so far. Newcastle are due to return next week, the end of next week for pre-season training. And Eddie Howe ideally would like more additions by then. He would have liked a few more players in. But as things stand, there's only been one senior exit, although Freddie Woodman will join Preston soon. But apart from that, they've only brought in Matt Target. I do think that Hugo Ekitike will eventually sign, as I said last week. That seems to be to do with various different agent issues and the like. Botman's a bit more complicated in terms of Milan are still there, and there is certainly receptiveness from at least some people around him for him to go there instead of to Newcastle. But they're still holding out for him. He's their first choice centre-back target, and if it isn't going to be Botman, they will move on to others. But certainly it has been a bit of a irritation in terms of the start of the window, not getting the players they want.
Yeah.
But there isn't any panic yet from Newcastle, although they would like to get a couple of deals completed in the next couple of weeks if possible.
It would be ideal, George, wouldn't it, to have some of those names over the line before the pre-season training kicks off and before the players come back?
Yeah, managers always say that they like to get their squad settled as quickly as possible, and they're always kind of irritable. You know, they'll have a week off or 2 weeks off and they want stuff to get happen when they're away, and of course it very rarely happens. We're in the same sort of situation as we were in January, in the sense that people see Newcastle coming and they'll be seeing pound signs, and at the same time we know that Newcastle will be haggling over everything because that's the message they've set from day one. They did the same thing with Dan Ashworth, refusing to pay over the odds, finally doing it, which is great news, but not doing it straight away. And so there is that sort of slight impasse at the minute. I haven't had a chance to talk about Matt Target. I'm delighted that he's coming back. I thought he was superb from January, really part of things, and delighted that got sorted out. I do think that was a no-brainer, particularly at that price. And no, we've just got to wait. We've just got to wait and see. It's, some other clubs have done business. That's fair enough. But, I think the thing is that however frustrating it feels at the moment, we know that Newcastle are going to make a move.
Yeah.
We know that Newcastle will be adding to their squad. We know that they'll bring players in. As journalists, we want to be getting on with it and writing it and talking about it and stuff like that. But it's such a nice feeling still to be in the position knowing that come the start of the season, Newcastle squad will be better.
Absolutely. It's not time for panic stations just yet, is it, chaps? You can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Right now, just go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. You get full access to all our great writing and ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcasts. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Sign up now. Right then, let's crack on. And first of all, first thing for us to talk about is the fixtures. The Premier League fixtures were released not so long ago, and that's right. Newcastle have to play every other team in the Premier League twice. That's an exclusive from Pod on the Tyne there, and it hardly seems fair, does it, Chris, that we have to play Man City twice? Can they not let us just play them once? It's like sort of like a handicap. Do you know what I mean?
But to be fair, I mean, next season Newcastle will be beating everyone, won't they? I mean, that's the new Newcastle, the new
first
Newcastle United over the last few months. victory is everything now. I don't know what defeat sounds like.
Absolutely. And the opener, that's an interesting game, isn't it? Newly promoted Nottingham Forest, George.
It's a great game.
It's good to see them back in the Premier League, isn't it? It's a fantastic game and it should be an amazing opener.
Yeah, it'll be absolutely brilliant. It'll be an absolute... Well, I mean, St James's is a fantastic atmosphere for every home game now, and that'll be no different. And it's brilliant seeing Nottingham Forest back. It's been too long since...
23 years.
Yeah. I look forward to the war flags filling the Gallagher End with a massive mural of Arthur Scargill's face. That's a joke that only people of a certain age will get. But it'll be an absolutely brilliant occasion. Yeah, it's a fantastic way to start that. And, you're doing the usual thing of looking down the list. Ooh, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Ooh, then it's Man City. Ooh, God, then Liverpool. But it's actually... it feels a bit different this season. It's sort of, you know, looking at those games as an opportunity rather than looking to see where Newcastle are going to get relegated.
It's always a great occasion, the first game of the season, isn't it, Chris? But this thing of Nottingham Forest coming back is going to add a little bit extra spice to it, isn't it? It's going to be a really interesting game, that.
Is that because it's the James Perch derby?
The Jack Colback derby. Come on. Jack Colback still plays for them, doesn't he? He's still playing for Nottingham Forest. Yeah.
He does, yeah.
I think he was playing left wing back quite a lot last season, but he does. And I do think that this is a very important opening game for Eddie Howe and Newcastle as well, though, because the start, in theory, looks all right. But if Newcastle don't beat Nottingham Forest on the opening day, they do have difficult games coming up against Man City and Liverpool. And so I do think the first game will be pivotal in so many ways. I'm not trying to heap too much pressure on it, but I do think that the earlier they can get the monkey off their back, having last season started so badly and having ended last season so well, I do think it feels huge. But Nottingham Forest will very much be up for that. They're a side who've, their form in 2022, like Newcastle's, has been ridiculous. It's been even better than Newcastle's. They went from being relegation candidates. I think they were the bottom three, might even been bottom, and then obviously came up via the playoffs. So it feels like a massive game. I am really, really looking forward to it. And then, yeah, as I say, that to have Man City and Liverpool up so early, if Newcastle can get a bit of momentum building it up in all those matches, that feels like it would be really important.
Yeah,
it's quite interesting as well. Those away games. I mean, obviously, Newcastle got a draw at Brighton with Eddie Howe in the stands, as far as I remember, and it was that game, wasn't it?
Yes.
And but the season before, that 3-0 defeat there was one of the most traumatic results in and performances in the club's recent history. You go back to Wolves last season, Wolves away last season.
Yeah.
That was arguably the low point of last season, the game before the takeover. So neither of those fixtures have been particularly kind to Newcastle. So I agree with Chris. I mean, I think there is a sort of, I think there'll be a, you know, desire to get a very strong start, to hit the ground running as far as possible. But as I say, you know, I think the nice thing now is that fixtures don't look like banana skins anymore. They don't look like, they don't look like this is our trauma every week. They now do feel like opportunities, and people are going into this fixture list anticipating. You know, there's that feeling of anticipation. I think a few months ago, you'd think about Liverpool and Man City, and it's like, oh God, how many are we going to lose by? Well, okay, fine. They may still lose this coming season, but what great fixtures to look forward to.
I usually send George to Brighton.
You send George to Brighton.
Mention that game, but actually, and he doesn't actually know this yet. It's not Brighton I'm sending to, but I am away when Newcastle are away at Southampton. So enjoy that trip, George. Different somewhere else on the South Coast for you.
When's that?
November, the weekend of November the 5th.
Fireworks there, Chris.
I'm on, Chris. I hate you so much.
Oh man,
I think I'm away.
Well, I'm sure you guys can you can sort out your schedule in between you at some point. But we've got a
I want to do this now. No, all right, okay, fine.
I think, do you know what it is? I often glance at the fixtures when they get released and go, oh, well, there's fixtures there. We're gonna have to play everybody at some point. And I think this year it's been slightly different. I looked at it and I'm in a group chat with a few friends of mine, and all of us looked at the fixtures and said, actually, I can't see a month in amongst all of that where I think Newcastle aren't going to pick any points up that month. And there's always been that month. And it's normally around about Christmas time where you look and there's about four or five fixtures against top six, eight teams, and you think, nah, we're knackered. We're not going to get anything there. So you can write off November, you can write off December or whatever. But looking at it this time, I mean, there isn't really a tricky month. Probably the trickiest month out of all of them is May, the run-in. Which is Arsenal, Leeds, Leicester and Chelsea. That is potentially difficult. But every other month in the calendar, I think, looking at it, I think there's points to be got there. There's points all over the place.
Absolutely, no. I mean, that's what I said. I mean, if this was last season and we're looking at that start, you'd be saying Forest, ooh, promoted team, that's really tricky. Brighton, lose that. City, lose that. Wolves, probably lose that. Liverpool, definitely lose that. Yeah. And then the manager gets sacked and we're in crisis and your season's already finished. And I mean, I'm so tuned to doing that, to looking at fixtures and thinking, no, the Newcastle can't win that, won't win that, and then we're absolutely screwed. And it just doesn't feel like that anymore.
No.
Yes, the run-in does look kind of quite difficult, but God knows where Newcastle will be at that point. I mean, and again, I think it's just this is like such a lovely moment in the club's recent history, in the sense that there isn't judgment at the moment. No one's judging anybody about anything. So once they'd got relegation out of the way last season as a something to be concerned about, everybody could enjoy every single part of the club. Even defeats were fine. Nobody was judging the team or the manager after losing 5-0 at City. And I think we're still in that honeymoon period where everything feels fresh and new. There'll come a point where, you know, when the team and the manager will be judged, you know, and maybe it'll be eighth place won't feel good enough at some point, or
yeah,
you know, or that draw isn't good enough. But we're not at that stage yet, and it's a very nice place to be.
It is, Chris. There's a great big chasm of a winter break slapped right in the middle, isn't there, for the World Cup, the 21st of November to the 18th of December, and it's going to be interesting to see how different teams deal with this and how their form is affected by it and the league positions and all that. Do you think it could be a good thing for Newcastle or a potentially a bad thing?
Well, there will have a few players at the World Cup, almost certainly. Bruno Guimaraes, you would very much suspect to be there. Fabian Schär, Kieran Trippier may well go with England.
Joe Linton could break in that squad.
So I think you're going to be talking, depending on what the summer business is, you're going to be talking probably between 6 and 8 players you'd have thought Newcastle will lose to the World Cup. A lot of other Premier League clubs will lose a greater number. And so it depends on your momentum going at that time. It feels so frustrating, and it'll be fascinating to see what Newcastle and other clubs do during that time. I mean, there's been a lot of talk that that a lot of them could go away on sort of mid-season training camps, if you want to call them. Obviously, Newcastle used those last season, but this is a far longer gap, and you can't have players not playing a single match for 5 weeks and then suddenly being back on Boxing Day to play. So Newcastle are going to have to come up with some fixtures, and Eddie Howe's going to have to manage his squad effectively during that time. So I generally don't know how it will affect Newcastle and others. It will have such a huge bearing on the season, though, because some clubs, I'm sure, will go into that with momentum and then falter, and probably the other way around with other clubs, and maybe some players come back from injury at a time when usually you would have, between November and December, you'd usually have about 15 games over the course of those 2 months, and instead you've got 4, and so that is really going to affect the Premier League season this year and change it a lot.
It's going to be interesting going through Christmas without that film of misery that's normally draped over everything to do with Newcastle United. Instead, it'll probably be England who provide us with that potentially. It's a funny one, that, George, isn't it? The old Christmas time World Cup. It's not something we've ever had to deal with before, but it's a winter break's been something that's been asked about for a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, God knows how that'll feel. I mean, I think it would be, you know, I think that thing that Chris mentioned there about Newcastle having players going away, that might become more of a source of interest, but also concern. I mean, in recent seasons, it's not as if there've been a huge number of players featuring in tournaments, but as Newcastle get bigger and better, hopefully, they'll have more players involved. So, you know, and obviously what you want is for those players to come back intact, really.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's going to be a new experience for all of us.
Absolutely. Right then, fixture chat done. Let us move on. We'll be back in just a minute with Phil Buckingham to talk about Derby Days.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Last week, to coincide with the new fixture list, George, somewhat perversely, wrote about a team Newcastle will not be playing this season. Our dear friends, Sunderland. It's already 6 years since the last Mags v Mackens League match, and that will become seven this season. And there hasn't been a gap that long since the end of the Second World War.
Richardson takes it all! A goal from the heavens for Kieran Richardson! And if that is to end the drought, well, what a fitting strike with which to do it.
I know fans want their rivals to suffer and they'll take glee out of that, but I think deep down, their game, certainly as a player and as a fan, I'm speaking personally, I would prefer it if they were in the league, because they're great games, one, to play, and they're great games to watch.
Looked in, and it's gone in! Newcastle have the lead, and what a wonderful effort it is from Ryan Taylor!
As much as the Newcastle fans will laugh at where Sunderland are and how low they've been, I would hope that they get in the Premier League because of those games. Fans will tell you, I'll tell you, that when the fixture list comes out, that's the one that you look for. I've played in several in different circumstances. I've played where there was no Newcastle fans at Roker Park, where there was no Sunderland fans at St James's Park. And obviously I've played in the atmosphere where it's been chaotic and great. So I've had a sort of a sample of everything, really. Obviously I got left out as well as a player under Ruud. And then Sunderland was my last ever kick of a football in a professional game. So I've had a bit of everything.
Here he comes. Oh, Shearer! It's foiled by a superb save from Sorensen.
Alan Shearer says as he gets older, the feeling of scoring gets sweeter and sweeter, and that will taste very nice indeed. It is last Weir Time Derby. Alan Shearer.
As George wrote, the derby is the biggest, pissiest game you could imagine, enormous in its gory irrelevance, except the two clubs, lost in fear, fighting to the depths. But do we actually miss it? To discuss that from across the great northeast divide, it's a big welcome to The Athletic's very own Phil Buckingham, football news reporter extraordinaire and a man with a soft spot for the red and white. How are we doing, Phil? Thanks for joining us.
I'm very well. How are you all?
Yes, very good, thank you. Very good, thanks.
Not too bad at all, not too bad. So what's our thoughts on this? Do we actually miss these derby games? I've got my very own opinion on it from a fan's point of view, but from your point of view, Phil, what do we think?
Well, I think it's easy for a Newcastle fan to say they don't miss them, because as things stand now, if you don't have the derbies, that means Sunderland are in a division lower. And that's the simple fact of it. I think it's easy to take the moral high ground and say, you know, that these derby games are more hassle than they're worth. But if I'm a Sunderland fan and I know that the only way I'm getting a derby back is by getting into the Premier League, and that has to be Sunderland's ambition, it's a different question about how much you enjoy them.
Yeah.
God, I've been to dozens over the years, and even the ones you win aren't much fun until the final whistle comes. Yeah. They are stomach churning, horrible days. I grew up in Northumberland, so most of my friends were Newcastle fans, so I know all about the stick you can be on the end of when a result doesn't go your way, and the stick you can dish out when it does. But I just think they are just great games. I know the actual 90 minutes isn't always that much fun. It can be poisonous. There's anxiety, and it's everything that's rolled into it should tell you you should run a million miles from these games, but these are the games that pull you in as a supporter ultimately. And, you know, listening to Alan Shearer, he says that these are the games you look for when a fixture list comes out, and if Sunderland were in the same division as Newcastle, absolutely, they'd be the first two games you look for, and I'm absolutely certain that it'd be the same for Newcastle fans as well.
Maybe. I think it's a bit...
I'm sure it would.
Do you know what? I honestly, from my point of view, I hate them. I hate the games. I wish we never have to play Sunderland ever again in my lifetime. I would prefer to never play Sunderland ever again.
That's because Newcastle have been so shit. For the last few times,
I'll admit that colours my feelings towards it somewhat. But even when we've beaten them, or even if it's been a draw, there's been games when I've just thought it's not worth. This isn't worth it. I've come out of St James's Park with heart palpitations and feeling like I'm going to collapse, and it's just not worth it. It just isn't. And my dad's a Sunderland fan. It's not worth it, man.
Was he really?
It's not worth it, George. What do you think, George?
Well, I mean. Oh no! I mean, I love them. I mean, I share all those feelings. But I mean, where else do you get those feelings in life? Where else do you get that feeling in football? And you know, it's that stomach turning. It's the nausea. It's not being able to sleep. It's the adrenaline. It's all those things. You just don't get them from any other game. And I think that's what people are scared of. I think they're scared of feeling that much. But that's what makes it so brilliant. And, you know, there are kind of horrible bits to the game, and there's been sort of horrible scenes. You don't want fans to have to be kettled to go to matches and to have all that kind of police stuff. And I wish it wasn't like that, and I don't think it should be. But that feeling, I think it's a fixture that shows the magnitude of football in the Northeast. Fans described it in that piece I did. It's and Roy Keane, you know, former Sunderland manager, man who won everything at Man United and of course went to Celtic as well. He compared it to Celtic versus Rangers, and I think it does. I think it compares to that in terms of magnitude. It's just that there's been nothing good at stake, and maybe that in fact is what gets into the atmosphere as well. It's the fact it's been the two teams sort of dragging each other down or having to try and stay up. It's been desperate, and that desperation comes into the atmosphere. But I just think, you know, imagine if both Newcastle and Sunderland were good at the same time and were competing for a trophy or in a cup final. I mean, it would be bedlam if it was a cup final, but it shows the power of football up here. It just... I think they're brilliant. I mean, as I say, I wish they didn't have the nastiness associated with it, but they're just enormous. They're enormous fixtures, and they make you feel like nothing else.
As George says, there isn't another fixture that makes you feel that way. You could play Man United at home and thump them, and I don't think you'd get the same burst of relief or emotion or passion as you would do beating your nearest rival. I just don't think that's the case. And that comes from the lives you lead amongst friends, foes, work colleagues. That's life in the Northeast, and there isn't another fixture like that. Sunderland's not a million miles from Middlesbrough, but it doesn't invoke anywhere near the same emotions. And it might do for Middlesbrough fans, but I, Sunderland fans will always look down their nose at the prospect of that being considered a derby, frankly.
Chris, it's often been in the recent years two shit teams trying to prove who's the least shit, hasn't it? And it was described to me very recently as like two bald men fighting over a comb, which I thought was quite good. But it's still a massive game, isn't it, regardless of which way you look at it?
Yeah, I mean, Shearer talks in his clip about Ruud Gullit and his decision, the famous decision to put him and Ferguson on the bench and what that meant. And I mean, Gullit arrived and didn't understand the significance of it in a sort of local context. And I think until you're within it, it is difficult to see that. I'm sure people elsewhere will look at it and say, well, why is it such a big thing? But I do think actually that the one city, one club mentality of both clubs as well, being 13 miles away from each other, however far it is, I think that makes a significant difference. Whereas if you have that sort of split within a city, it's different. It's part of the culture. It's part of what you brought up in. And Phil's mentioned that he was brought up in Northumberland, where you have sort of majority Newcastle, but you also get some pockets of Sunderland up there. Obviously, Taylor, you're from an area where it's almost 50-50 split in terms of those two sides. But that lack of quality in the last sort of 15, 20 years is interesting. I was going to ask Phil about this actually, because I was wondering how Sunderland fans sort of looked at, obviously, they've got a very good recent record, and a lot of Newcastle fans sort of disparagingly, I suppose, to a certain extent, would say about Sunderland. That was the entirety of their season. They didn't care about anything else except that they would beat Newcastle and that would keep them up. What was the view during those matches, Phil, from your point of view, in terms of obviously there was the famous De Canio match and all those, and the Newcastle results did seem to play such a significant part in keeping Sunderland in the Premier League.
The amount of times they'd be on an absolutely horrific run leading up to a Newcastle game, and then all of a sudden they would find a win from nowhere. and it would often be a trigger for the season. It would be the one where Barini scored at the Stadium of Light around sort of October, November. I'm sure they hadn't won in the first 12 games or something, and all of a sudden that got the season going. They survived again, and as you mentioned, De Canio, some fantastic memories from those games and that run of wins. But you know, I've been on the other end of it. You know, the game Shearer talks about is last, the 4-1 at the Stadium of Light. I was there for that. So yeah, they can make you want to float home that night or that afternoon, or they can make you want to go home and top yourself. Frankly, that's just the sort of the magnitude of what it brings out in you. It's I don't mind admitting that the game where Shearer was on the bench, I was one of the, I think it was something like 800 Sunderland fans in the ground, because the St James was getting redeveloped, drenched to the bone, and I could have floated home that night, and it will remain one of my happiest days in football. I'm absolutely certain of it. But I'm sure everyone will have a night like that or an afternoon like that in a derby. That's just the way it is.
I was in the press box for that match, and we were drenched to the bone in there. People's laptops exploding all around me and all this kind of stuff, and it felt like it was apocalyptic that day. I mean, from the moment that the team sheet comes out, and those, I mean, you know, the drama around that, Newcastle obviously sort of in the midst of this incredible civil war, and you knew that if Newcastle had won that night and they took the lead, that Shearer would have gone. He says that himself, and it went the other way around, but Shearer was still in the dressing room saying to Paul Robinson before kickoff, go out and beat them bastards. You know, he wanted Newcastle to win, but that jumble of emotion. I mean, I think the sort of interesting thing about the last 10 years and Sunderland's brilliant record is that they might have been in desperate straits in the league for some of that, but they got the derby right. They understood the derby, and that went back to the 5-1 defeat at St James's, where they were absolutely hammered, and they turned out. Lee Cattermole talks in this piece about saying they turned up, they fancied themselves, they were doing pretty well that season, wore posh suits and didn't lay a glove on Newcastle, and he was in particular was determined that wouldn't happen again. And for the same fixture the following season, no music, nothing daft, and Cattermole was going to make a challenge within the first 30 seconds that set a tone, and my God, he did it. And it that difference, it I think for Newcastle fans, it came to sort of sum up the Ashley years in some way, that Newcastle just couldn't get to grips with the meaning of the derby, and Sunderland just understood it.
You're absolutely right in the sense that derbies can shape legacies and how people perceive, and that's like the power of that game. You mentioned Hullett, but you can say Steve Bruce, on the other hand, that in that 5-1 game, he never really recovered from that game.
Yeah.
And he did good things as Sunderland manager, but that game forever sort of sullied his reputation, and that's the power of those games. Alan Pardew couldn't get a derby right, could he? And that's the way people can perceive you, on the back of derbies, unfairly or fairly.
Yeah, I think the game down at the Stadium of Light, the Ryan Taylor goal, the free kick, that was one of those days where Pardew maybe got it all right, and you know, Newcastle turned up, and I remember being at the stadium at 8 o'clock in the morning to get on a coach to go to that game, and it was just a ridiculous day all round from start to finish. And I remember coming home, I think it was probably 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening by the time we got back, and the entire bus singing Ryan Taylor over the wall, and it was just one of those days that it wasn't as spectacular as the 5-1, but it was just a brilliant day from start to finish. I still felt like my heart was going to explode out of my chest all the way through, though, and I still don't know whether I'd want to have that back or not. But
it's quite interesting our respective backgrounds here, because I grew up in Durham, and so I was, you know, that was mostly Sunderland territory. Yeah. And at school, my best mate was a Sunderland fan. My first long-term girlfriend was a Sunderland fan and her family, and I lived with them for a bit. And I've never, ever had as a fan, I've never ever had the hatred gene. And then, you know, obviously I've reported on Sunderland for a long time as well. My dream has always been for both clubs to, I mean, my ideal season would be for Newcastle and Sunderland to be first and second in the Premier League and sharing all the trophies. But I realise that makes me quite weird. But what was it like, Taylor, if you say your dad was a Sunderland fan, what was it like growing up in that household when these games came around?
It was always interesting, put it that way. We normally had to watch the game in separate rooms. It was strange because my dad was very much of the opinion that I should be an England fan rather than pick a club team, because with England you only got disappointed every 2 years instead of every other week. So it was sort of one of those things, you know. But it was my uncle Steve who was the first person who said to me, "Come on, do you want to come to Newcastle and we'll go and watch the game up there?" And I went with him. And I just fell in love straight away. And my dad was very gracious about the whole thing. Obviously, it's pretty hard for your only child to suddenly decide they support the rivals. You know, it's a hard one, that. But he took it in good grace. And as I mentioned on the live show last week, he made me my Christmas dinner on the stairs after he bought me a Newcastle shirt. So yeah, interesting times in the Payne household during the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing that does spoil derbies, and this is a genuine point, is what it does to people in the Northeast, whether it's punching a horse or the need to kettle fans from one station to the ground. That's the sadness of it, because as George just mentioned, that two best men at my wedding are both Newcastle fans. The vast majority of people I went to school with were Newcastle fans. I don't hate them. They're some of my best friends, and obviously you. When a derby comes round, you sort of rein in your friendship a little bit, and you try not to speak to them that day. But I mean, ultimately, I've never quite understood where the hatred comes from, and it gets worse. That's the sad thing of it. I'm not suggesting the 60s and 70s were some golden time where everyone skipped together to watch the match, and you could mix in whatever stand. But it's definitely got worse from the 90s onwards, and I don't know if that's the I honestly don't know what it comes down to, but that would be the one thing, the one thing that sours it really. And I'm sure any city and any rivalry would say the same. If you went up to Glasgow on Old Firm Day, I bet it's horrendous in some places, and A&E's and everything like that. That's the sadness of it. But bring them back, please.
I agree. And one thing I do want to ask is, you've written loads, Phil, recently about Sunderland, and you were at the playoff matches, and but you've also sort of written about the ownership structure as well. So for people who might not, whose first inclination might not be to read about Sunderland, give us a kind of overview about what you think the sort of overall health of Sunderland is at the minute.
That's a big question, and one I might struggle to answer in 2 minutes, but... Yeah, I think an awful lot of people felt let down when it transpired that Kira Louis-Dreyfus only owned 41% of the club. That's the bottom line. Supporters felt misled, and the fact that the remainder of the club belonged to the old regime, so to speak, that felt like a kick in the teeth, because for a long time they almost like lived a lie that this was a new era, and everything had turned a page and Sunderland's future was bright again, because the people that supporters really couldn't get on with towards the back end are still there. Now, they maintain that they're 39%, which is Stuart Donald and Charlie Methven, they maintain that they are aiming to sell that before the new season starts, which is only, I think it's 5 weeks this weekend. So they've got the work cut out. They say there's interest there. Now, a lot of people, I'm sure, enjoyed the fact that there was sort of like crypto bros, as they say, wanting to buy 39% of Sunderland, and I'm sure it feels almost comical if you're a Newcastle fan washing in money, but at the same time it'd feel like such a backward step for Sunderland if that was to happen. My gut feeling says it won't, but sooner or later the ownership issues need resolving, because I don't think it's healthy for a club to have as many voices as Sunderland currently have. And Louis-Dreyfus says that he has the controlling voice, and I'm sure he does, but I think it feels like a dead weight, sort of metaphorically and physically, that Sunderland can't move on from the Stuart Donald, Charlie Methven era without them leaving. And you would like to think Kieran Louis-Dreyfus upped his own stake, because I do think he's got big ambitions for the club. He's done the business so far, and I don't think it's going to be a quick fix. I don't think Sunderland are going to throw millions at it in the next 2 to 3 years to get to the Premier League, but there is a self-sustainable model there, and he wants the club to be run properly. So take him on his word, and he's got good ideas for the club, but he needs a bigger say, I think.
It'll be interesting to see how Sunderland fare in the Championship in this coming season. It's a tough league to be in, and getting out of it and staying out of it is a massive ask. And, you know, Fulham fans and Norwich fans will have an opinion on that of almost those clubs who get caught between those two leagues and can't make the permanent switch. It's a difficult season for them, isn't it, Phil? And they're going to really have to be on the ball with this.
Yeah, because I think, as uncomfortable as it might be for Sunderland supporters, I think a club like Middlesbrough, who will probably have 10,000 less at every home game, Middlesbrough will have a much bigger budget than Sunderland will. And I think an awful lot of Championship clubs will. The hope for Sunderland will be, when you look at Huddersfield and you look at Luton and what they did last year, that money isn't everything in the Championship. And if you've got a good coach and you recruit well, then a top six, top 10 finish is possible. Having come out of League One, if you offered me mid-table, I think that would be a good finish for Sunderland. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. I don't think they're going to suddenly leap up to the Premier League in one go. I know we've seen Wolves do that in past years, and Southampton, Norwich. That would be an awfully big ask. And yeah, just consolidation and look to build. I think that would be a good year for Sunderland.
What I love about this, about the conversation, talking to Newcastle fans, is how much fewer Newcastle fans want the derby back than Sunderland fans. And of course, the reason for that, not just Sunderland's brilliant record recently, it's also that thing of life is so good at the minute. It's like we're all feeling so positive. It's like, don't spoil it. No, please don't do anything to spoil it. And there's less confidence. You know, even though Newcastle theoretically have all this money and stuff like that, there's actually less. Please just don't do anything to jeopardise.
George, it doesn't come from a place of hating Sunderland or not wanting Sunderland to do well. It comes from a place of life is a lot less complicated if I don't have to deal with playing Sunderland twice a year.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with Sunderland. Well, it is, but it's not that I don't want Sunderland to do well and I hate Sunderland. It's not that. It's just my life is so much easier.
Come on, who wants easy? Who wants easy?
Absolutely. Thanks very much for your time, Phil, and good luck this season, and we'll see how it goes.
I know you don't mean it.
I do. Come on. Cheers, Phil.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So we're going to wind the clock back a bit now and catch up with an exclusive interview Chris did with the Right Honourable Big Dan Byrne. This conversation actually took place during the final week of last season, but we've all been so busy we haven't really had a chance to hear from the big man until now. Fascinating chat though, so let's have a listen to a chunk or two from Chris's interview and we can share our thoughts after that, chaps. What do you reckon? Chris, where do you want to start?
I think we should start with, obviously, Dan Byrne. This came in the aftermath of Newcastle beating Arsenal at that wonderful weekend. I spoke to him a couple of days afterwards, but his career has taken an unusual trajectory. I mean, he actually was in Newcastle's academy and was released. And when he was released from Newcastle, he wasn't even in the academy. He was in their development side, which is before the academy. And he actually had to go to non-league football because he was released. And he was pushing trolleys around a local Asda in Blyth that his dad worked at to try and make ends meet as he was finishing school and embarking on a non-league career.
Bit of a new heart on a Saturday, which is... Like, it was a good team. Like, it's known for bringing players through, like, good local players. And I had a couple of mates. Like, my mate Crooks, he was a keeper there, and Wadey was a midfielder there, so I ended up going along. But I was never getting a game. Like, I was turning up every week, and then I might get, like, 5-10 minutes at the end, but I was never going to start. And then, like, my friends were doing stuff, and I obviously had no money to do it. So I just said, like, oh, I think I need to get a job on a Saturday. I was at sixth form. And then my dad, obviously he's at Sainsbury's now, but he was at Asda and stuff, so Asda replied, managed to make a few calls and got an interview there. So I remember, like, turning up in my suit to have an interview, and it was like just to, like, stack shelves or whatever. You know what I mean? And the only job I had was pushing trolleys. And I was like, yeah, stuff I'll take. So I used to do like half one ten on a Saturday. And then, like, just give up playing football on the Saturday, because I said I wasn't playing anyway, so, and I wanted to go out and go to the cinema with my mates or go to town or whatever. So,
and obviously, Byrne's done extremely well over the course of the last 6 months, but there's Newcastle are interested in Sven Botman at the minute, and so it's, even though this interview took place a few weeks ago, this answer is sort of timely. I asked him about both the potential of the new Newcastle United and also, as someone who spent a career proving people wrong, does he still believe that he can maintain his position in the side and be the starting left centre back going forward?
I don't think there's a limit to it, but like I feel like people think I'm stupid for saying that because of the position that we're in at the moment. But listen, like, from the fan base and like the feel of like how big the club is for the city, I think we could do anything we want to do. Like, I'd love for it to be like winning the Premier League because I think like the club deserves it, and like getting into the Champions League and stuff. And I'm not saying that like that's going to happen. Like, next season we're going to go and win the league, the Champions League. But it's like, as long as we're building towards that, like, I think that's huge. And like, I think obviously we're going to have to add to like playing stuff and different stuff that does it, because like those are the levels that we're at. Like, we're competing with like Man City and Liverpool, which are like the best teams in the world, probably the best teams that the Premier League's ever seen. Do you know what I mean? We'll have to catch up to that at some point. But I genuinely think that at some point we will be doing that. Like, we just hope that I'm here for most of the ride. Like,
well, I mean, I suppose you spend your career to an extent proving people wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Proving that they were wrong. Yeah. Do you back yourself to move on?
100%. Like, I've half felt a little bit that, like, when I signed here, I wasn't like, I'm not a stopgap. I think that's not doing myself justice, but as in, like, they needed someone straight away to come in with Premier League experience that loved the club and like had what it took to keep the team up. And then thought when I got the summer, they'll probably look for sort of like 60-70-80 million pound players and stuff, which is like absolutely right to find. But I'll back myself against anyone who comes in. Like, I've done it my whole career, proved people wrong. And like, whoever the club brings in, I'll always feel as if I'm like good enough to be ahead of them and stuff. So, as I said, like, I feel as if I've proved a lot of people wrong since I've got here. Not that the manager might have thought that, or the owners might have thought that, or the fans might have thought that, but I do feel as if I've proven that I deserve to be here, and like I can be here for as long as I want to be.
And for Dan Byrne, as for so many other Newcastle United fans, Alan Shearer was his hero growing up, and he tells a story in the club programme about how he was at a function with Ollie Lee, the son of Rob Lee, and Alan Shearer came walk up to him and he basically embarrassed himself and didn't know what to say a few years ago. And he's desperate to meet his boyhood hero. He's not met him yet, but Alan from work very kindly sent across a message for me to play to Big Dan Byrne, and this was his reaction to that.
Big Dan Byrne, congratulations on a great season, man. You have been awesome. You've stiffened that back four up. Congratulations, well done. And a magnificent game against Arsenal. It's the best I've seen for a while. The atmosphere, you boys have certainly turned it around in some style. Welcome home, it must be great. And I look forward to having a pint with you. Cheers. All the best, man. Well done.
That's unreal, man. Absolutely class.
Yeah, send it, man, because that's unreal. Like, as I said, like, it's growing up, you're a Newcastle supporter, like, you want to be Alan Shearer. Like, you want to be captain of Newcastle, like, scoring goals every week, like, playing in front of, like, your home ground and stuff. And, like, the fact that I met him once and, like, I, like, see him talking about us in the press and stuff, just, like, absolutely mental. Like, absolutely mental. And just, like, it's just, like, to have him talking about us is just, like, something I don't think I'll ever get over.
Oh, God, I bloody love Dan Byrne. I bloody love him. I bloody love him. There's loads of him as well, Chris, and I love every single centimetre of that lad. He is amazing. What a chap. What an absolute legend. I love the idea of somebody sitting in Asda car park in Blyth and just thinking, look at the fucking size of that lad pushing them trolleys. Just, oh, what a guy. What a dude. He sounds like an absolute chap as well.
He was brilliant to chat to. I mean, I was with him for about an hour and a quarter at a coffee shop in Jesmond, and he's just so down to earth, and he just doesn't give the sort of cliched response you'd expect from footballer. He's very self-deprecating as well. Actually, one of my editors, when I sent in the piece, sent me a message saying it's the first footballer he's heard talk about how shit they were when they were actually young. Just basically, he talks about how poor he was growing up in terms of footballing wise, how he never thought he was going to make it in so many ways, how at Newcastle were right to release him because his body sort of outgrew him at that point, and he's built his way up, and he's a wonderful story, and I'm so pleased to see that he's done so well. The reception he's received from Newcastle fans, because when he first came in, eyebrows were raised from a lot of people. I'll admit, when I first heard you'd gone from Sven Botman, who was, there was so much excitement around Europe, to suddenly they were signing Dan Byrne, and who, until a few weeks before he signed, hadn't even been a regular in the Brighton central defence. He'd mainly been used here and there, but he's come in and he's been exactly what they needed, just as George was talking about Matt Target earlier. But having that connection with the club, and just the fact that he's sort of living that dream, and he's talked about how over the summer he was going to sit back and really try and absorb everything that's gone on, because it's been a whirlwind for him, but an absolutely wonderful story, and I'm just so delighted for him.
George, it's a story as old as time, isn't it? Local lad, done well. But he's been immense since he joined Newcastle United, and I don't think we would have been quite as good in our upturn of form without Dan Byrne back there.
Oh, he was brilliant. He was brilliant, yeah. Absolutely sensational, and yes, it's that. The thing I love most about it is not just, you know, local boy coming home. Shearer, of course, did that, but, you know, Shearer was a world record signing. I love the fact that Byrne has been part of this sort of takeover, this enormous transformative takeover, and yet he is so grounded, so grateful for the opportunity to come back. Famously sort of embraced, as Chris wrote, embraced Mirdad Guedousi after the last home game of the season, and said thank you for bringing me home. And I'm not regular in my praise for Chris, but put it that way on this pod. Oh, I am, really. But that was my favourite interview of last season of anything anywhere. I just thought it was sensational. He came across so well. It was handled beautifully by Chris, and yeah, I love the fact that he's one of the public faces of this of the club, and it means such a lot to him. I would urge people to read it, because it's even better written down. It's just a beautiful, beautiful piece of work.
It's a great interview, Chris, I have to say. And Dan Byrne seems to have had a permanent chuff on since the minute he arrived back in Newcastle, doesn't he? And who can blame him, let's be honest?
Exactly. I mean, as George mentioned, in terms of that being so grateful to everything that goes on. I mean, the interview starts with, because I'd spoken to people in and around him before I went to do the interview, and basically had a conversation with his dad, who was down visiting over New Year, and they were talking about Newcastle and whether he would ever return. And he responded with, well, Newcastle have been taken over. They're going to be going for world-class players now. They're not going to be signing Brighton's Dan Byrne. And it's just that sort of wonderful story that a few weeks later, he's then back and he's central to everything that Newcastle have been over the last few months. And he brings that sort of... It's so important to have that thread with the club remaining, the local thread, if you can have it there, given everything that's going to go on from now. I think that's another reason why it's important that Paul Dummett signed another contract, why Sean Longstaff hopefully is going to stay for a little bit, having signed another contract as well. To have those local players, someone like Dan Byrne, being in the first team is wonderful, and it's let's hope going forward that he does have real competition for that centre back place, and that it forces him to be even better than he's been so far, and that can only lift Newcastle hopefully to greater heights.
Absolutely right then, chaps. I think it's time we just about wrap things up. But just before we do, have either of you boys got anything in the works planned ahead of the pre-season period? What have we got to look forward to from you two?
Well, I've got a holiday to look forward to. See you later.
Fair play. Chris, you going anywhere nice in your jollies this year?
No, last week I went to Whitley Bay for the day. That was nice. That's about as far as I've gone.
Amazing.
Well, have I got anything coming up to plan? I'm going to, for midweek, I'll be doing a piece sort of looking at the transfer situation as we talked about, where Newcastle, where things stand on that front, and also with the players coming back in 10 days' time or so, at least the non-internationals, looking ahead to the pre-season and the situation in Newcastle. I mean, Newcastle are still yet to confirm pre-season, believed to be going to Austria and Central Europe, but they haven't confirmed that yet, that tour. Also, yet to confirm season ticket situation. That's still something big that will be talked about at some point soon, and I'll do a piece on that when that's announced, because it's such a huge talking point for so many supporters, and whatever conclusion they come to, some people are going to be left disappointed. But what we can be sure of is that next season, once again, St James's Park is going to be full every week.
I think it's going to be an interesting summer. There's not going to be quiet weeks like we've had in the past. I think there's going to be new stuff going on all the time. So you can stick with us here on Pod on the Tyne, usually every Tuesday and sometimes Wednesdays if you're unlucky. But we'll be back every single week between now and the start of the season to keep you up to date with all the latest news. And don't forget, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months right now at theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod. Thanks very much, chaps. It's been nice to get back together and record. George, thank you for your time.
Yes, you're very welcome.
Do we have to thank George for his time? You know, I feel
it really
like
didn't sound like George meant that there, did it?
No, actually, we shouldn't be talking about football. We should be, I don't know, all in a puddling pool eating ice creams or something. I don't know. Maybe not
six?
The same puddling pool.
I'm not getting in a paddling pool we used to. Definitely not. But the ice cream van has just gone past, so I'll go and grab some Mr. Whippies from him. Right, thanks very much, chaps. We shall speak to you next week. Thanks to all of you listening out there, from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Take it easy. Goodbye.
The Athletic.